Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today I talk with illustrator and designer Jordan Wong. We talk about how he searched for a job for 2 years after college, automatic drawings, his struggles with cultural identity, and more. Plus, Jordan created an incredible poster just for Creative South listeners. Check out the show notes to pre-order yours today. I want to thank our friends over at Jack Prints for sponsoring this episode. Whatever you need printed, they can do it. Do you need stickers? Jack Prints can do it. Do you need t-shirts? Jack Prints can do it. Embroidered hats, business cards, banners? Jack Prints can do it. They make great stuff at a great price. Speaking of banners, Jack Prints has their lowest prices on banners ever right now. Some of them are up to 70% off. I just looked up the cost of an 8-foot by 5-foot banner. How much do you think it should cost? $200? $300? More? You can get it at Jack Prints for just $70. While we're talking about great offers, let's talk about the fact that Jack Prints is offering a free silver ink upgrade going on right now. But it's not just on silver ink. If you're looking to get something embroidered, you can get free silver thread too. So when you get something printed or embroidered, now through the end of the year, add some silver ink into that design. If you love pocket-sized notebooks, check out Jack Prints Pocket Notes. They come with tons of great options, making them perfect for gifts, giveaways, branding, and custom office supplies. Custom pocket notebooks are sized for quick sketching and note-taking. Plus, unlike other printers who, you know, make you design around their logo and have all those parameters like that, Jack Prints builds their custom notebooks from the ground up, giving you the entire cover to customize in vivid full color. Jack Prints makes great, affordable stuff for designers like you and I. They focus on quality and customer service and have been loyal Creative South sponsors for years. Why not pick them next time you need stickers, banners, or pocket notebooks printed? Plus, Jack Prints is giving you a great discount. You can save up to $75 on your next order. Just use promo code CS16podcast at checkout or visit jack.ink/design. Are you ready to explore your creativity and meet a ton of new friends while you're doing it? Then head over to creativesouth.com right now and get your Creative South tickets. Join us April 6th through 9th in Columbus, Georgia for Creative South, where you come as friends and leave as family. If you like the podcast and want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/creativesouth. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. Plus, when you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts, and you can even get your own podcast episode. So please, help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. I mean, at that point, it's just a time compression. So.
Yeah, for sure. So,
that'd be cool for you to do some process stuff with that.
Yeah, you know, I've been wanting to. That's definitely been on my docket, but you know how it is. If you have like a barrier, even if it's like a small barrier, it's like enough to just be like, maybe I'll do it later.
Oh yeah, I'm good at that. That's the motive that rules my life.
Oh my god, it's so bad sometimes.
Yeah, I'm the king of procrastination, so it if there's ever a reason to put something off or not do something, I'm gonna find that reason.
Oh man, and it's especially like it's the simplest thing too. Like I could have just Googled like, you know, desktop, you know, recorder, capture, or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's like 750 of them out there at this point in time, but.
Yeah. It's nice, though, that like QuickTime does that. That's really great.
Because you can just, I mean, you can basically click it so it records your own screen and then you can crop it how you want it, or you can set it up to be cropped already and just record that area.
Oh my God. Yeah. What have I been doing? Oh, I should have been doing this a long time ago.
Well, I'm glad I could help.
I wanted to do a promo because on my website right now, I have like a couple like interviews and like, you know, podcast things and articles that I've written. And I wanted to somehow connect that to like a promotion of people signing on to my newsletter. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, the promo would be like, you know, if you read one of the articles and you send me like a little blip of it or what you thought, then, mm-hmm. you know, you would get like a coupon code for my online store, just like little things like that.
Oh yeah. Those, all those things help, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's not much you can do to hurt it unless you're just, unless you're just an a-hole and like berate people.
Yeah. That's the hardest part, is like whenever you're selling
not things, being an a-hole.
We're just like, you know, I guess it's hitting this balance or hitting that fine line of, you know, being visible and, you know, being active but not being obnoxious or bothersome. Sure. You know, because no one likes to be, you know, sold something. No. Or you know, no one likes it whenever someone's like, oh, you should buy this now. But at the same time, you know, you have to say something. You have to promote. You have to market what you're selling. You can't be silent. So
that's, yeah, the hard sale is, it's defining the line between being too soft and being too hard.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough. It's so definitely tough.
Yeah. They don't make a Viagra for marketing, so.
I wish they sometimes did, you know.
Yeah, it would make life easier. There, you know, if that easy button that Staples sells really worked, life would be much easier for everybody.
I wonder if, like, at a point, direct mail was the Viagra for marketing. That's probably
how they, I'm sure it was. I mean,
pushed it, you know, like at that time, because it's like, oh man, like this piece of mail that's going straight to, you know, your target audience, and you can like specialize it so it says their name. Like, that was probably big back in the day.
I don't know, Von Glitchka still swears by it, of sending out postcards and things like that directly to his audience, and swears that it works great for him. So,
you know, I can see that, especially since, you know, a lot of promotion is now done through email lists, mm-hmm. And like email newsletters. So actually receiving something physical, I think might be more impactful in this quote unquote digital age.
Yeah. Like I said before, it's certainly not going to hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, so, that's true. Yeah,
if there's a way you can do it and see the direct tie in and direct numbers that come back from it, that would be awesome though.
I've always wondered though, like how, I guess the recipient's reaction to that, what that would be.
Think of how you react when you get stuff like that. Like when it's not just, you know, the Bed Bath & Beyond coupons that go out to everybody, when it's like something that you're actually interested in.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Granted, I haven't gotten one of those in the mail in forever.
I swear, that all my mail is just coupons and like,
oh yeah,
you know, Penny Saver. I'm just like, oh my God.
I mean, I could theoretically save hundreds of dollars at Bed Bath & Beyond or Kohl's or name your other big box retailer that sends out stuff like that. And
I'm so bad when it comes to like taking advantage of like the sales and using coupons. I'm the worst at it.
Yeah,
I'm so bad. And you're right. You can save so much money. But at the same time, you have to like, I wonder if the value of the money saved is equivalent to the time that is spent to like find those deals and cut out the coupons or, you know, sign up for the newsletters or whatnot.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be, I'm sure someone's done tons of research on it. I mean, there's a whole industry around it. So I'm sure there's plenty of research, but yeah, I've never like sat down to crunch those numbers for myself or anything like that.
I wonder if this topic is at all interesting towards designers.
I don't know.
Because we're like talking about like, oh yeah, just penny savers.
You know, designers get mail too. So we all get mail. That's the one of the constant. Everybody gets junk mail that they don't want.
Yeah,
And every once in a while, there's something in there that you find interesting. So it's a human constant, or at least in the United States, it is.
Yeah.
I can't speak for other countries because I don't get mail in those countries.
It's true.
Well, since we've already dove into this and been going, let's back up a little bit and do the formal introduction, and let's let everybody know who you are. You're Jordan Wong.
That is me.
Of Wong Face.
Yep.
Which, that name cracks me up.
So it's a lot of people have asked me, like, you know, how did you come up with Wong Face, or, you know, where did that come from? And the story behind it is kind of interesting. So when I was in high school, the big game console back then was the Xbox.
Sure.
And everyone was losing their shit whenever Xbox Live came out, especially at that time when Halo 2 was really big. So I remember, I have many memories of just going home and, you know, getting online and playing that with my friends. So back then you had to make a gamer tag.
Sure.
And I was trying to think of, like, oh man, what should mine be? And then I remembered this one time I was getting ready for school. And this is when MTV was, like, on in the mornings, and they would actually play music videos, and sometimes they would have, like, little news broadcasts of, like, the music industry and whatnot.
Sure.
And they were talking about there's this little joke about Nick Lachey and how he wanted to now start going by Nick Face Killa.
Oh, jeez.
So I thought that was really funny. I was like, oh, what about, like, Wong Face Killa? So then I made that my gamer tag, and that kind of stuck. And then that became a nickname in high school. Like, people started calling me Wong Face. So then in college, whenever we were kind of working on our own self-branding, I decided to go with something. I wanted to go with something a little more quirky than just, like, Jordan Wong Design, because that's kind of boring, in my opinion.
Imagine a designer who just uses their name and then slaps design on it. I don't think that's ever been done before at all.
I mean, for me personally, and, you know, the work that I do, which is more imaginative, more quirky, it just didn't make sense to just have Jordan Wong Design. I think it would completely be a disconnect what I do. So I was like, oh, what about Wong Face? And then I decided to go forward with that because I thought it characterized my personality of my work, and everything that I just enjoy doing with my illustration and also in my design.
Yeah, so. I think it's one of those that the first time I heard it, I just started cracking up, just because, you know, it was playing on your last name and all that. And I just, for some reason, I imagined somebody with a bad speech impediment who couldn't say L's right and saying, you know, instead of saying, why the long face, why the Wong Face?
Yeah.
You know, you ever watch Big Bang Theory, Kripke on there, the kind of guy who antagonizes the main characters. He's the other scientist, and he's got that speech impediment where his L's are all W's. I imagined that the first, like, I read it and I knew where it was coming from, but I still, that was, like, the narrative I built in my head, or, like, somebody trying to say Wrong Face and screwing it up.
I'll tell you what, all my life I've had those puns just completely, you know, bombard me. And actually, it's almost like, it's like kind of a way to weed out, like, who I want to hang out with.
Yeah. Like, if they make a pun that makes you laugh.
Well, if I first meet someone and they, like, go and they use that pun, like, switching out Wong and Wrong, you know,
yeah.
You know, which is, like, I've heard it all my life. I'm just like, oh my God. Like, part of me kind of wants.
Oh, so I've just gotten myself knocked out of the who you want to hang out circle. Too late, sir. You have already hung out with me.
You, like, I've met you before, so yeah. Like, you've hit that point where it's like, okay, I could probably make this joke, and it's, you know, but right out of the gate, it's just like,
no, oh. That wouldn't be something I would have made right out of the gate.
You know, I appreciate your honesty.
Yeah, no, I mean, don't get me wrong, especially now that I'm a parent, I enjoy a good pun, but but that would not have been the that would not have been something I would have made right out of the gate. It would it you know, it takes actually having a couple beers with you and some some interesting tacos to be able to make that joke. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned you kind of came back around to Wong Face when you were in college. Where did you go to college at?
I went to a just a small state school in Pennsylvania. It's California University of Pennsylvania. So it's not in
at all confusing.
I it's
is there a California Pennsylvania?
There is a California Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Actually. Yeah. Just like there's an Indiana, Pennsylvania is as well.
So people in Pennsylvania just really like to name towns after states?
Apparently. Although, I guess this isn't the first time I've heard like something like this. Like, I think actually in California there is a Pittsburgh. Huh. But I'm not sure if they actually have the H on the end or not. I think there was someone like told me like the H is missing or something. I could be wrong about that. But yeah, there is a California, Pennsylvania.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, there's tons of cities and states all over the place that are like identical names. Like, how many Hollywoods are there? You got Hollywood, yeah, California, right. Hollywood, Florida. There's a Hollywood, Kansas. Hollywood, you know,
it's true.
I think somebody put out there that Hollywood is like the second most popular name for a city in the states.
It'd be cool to like find some uncharted territory and start developing it and like building some sort of community there and just call it like Hollywood City.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be awesome. Cause wasn't Hollywood, California originally Hollywood Land? Isn't that what it was?
Man.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was Hollywood Land.
That is a mouthful. Hollywood, yeah. Landville.
Yeah, just rolls keep off the tongue. Yeah, Hollywood, yeah. Landville. Exactly.
Just keep at it.
Hollywood, Landville, Berg.
Berg.
Hamlet. other words that I probably would have missed when I was taking the SAT for synonyms for cities.
I think at some point it actually turns into a food item, like the Hollywoodville Utopia Burger. You know, just add burger at the very end.
Oh, I haven't had breakfast yet. For some reason, that sounds delicious. I don't even know what would be on it, but it'd be full of glamorous yet non-substantive foods. Yeah. So Cheetos.
Yeah.
All glitz and glamour on the outside? Because, you know, you think glitz and glamour and you think Cheetos.
First thing comes to mind.
So going through school at the, what was it, California State
University? No, California University. Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to try it again. I'll just butcher it. So going to school in California, in Pittsburgh, in Pennsylvania.
I guess I should clarify that, like, California, PA is actually, it's like an hour southeast of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Yeah. And you could call it CalU for sure. Actually, if you go to their website, it's calu.edu, which is amazing because I don't know how they got that domain. For the longest time, it was CUP, which stands for Cal University of Pennsylvania. But now it's calu.edu.
I personally think they should have kept with cup.edu.
I kind of like that.
I mean, it's so synonymous with college. You got beer pong, you know, you got the red solo cup that everybody's got walking around. It's yeah, just right? The college experience. So while you're at CalU, what do you start off studying? Do you start off being a straight up art major, or do you try to find yourself like so many other college students?
My story is pretty similar to a lot of, you know, graphic designers, illustrators. You know, in high school, I loved art, I loved drawing, and I loved the computer. So, of course, it's like, oh, I'll go into graphic design. I have no idea what that is, really. But I know that I
sounds cool.
Yeah, I like making images on the computer. So it's like, all right, that sounds about right. So I actually did go into college with the idea of being a graphic design major.
Sure.
But yeah, it wasn't until college that I really learned what graphic design was and thankfully and very fortunately, I fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. I was absolutely fascinated by it instead of realizing, oh crap, this isn't what I wanted to. So I was very lucky. But in addition to my graphic design degree, I also studied business marketing. So I actually had 2 degrees. Yeah.
So you were a double major.
I was a double major. Yeah.
Did your parents push you in that, or did you do that on your own?
I think it was more so my parents pushing me.
Well, and I asked that because, you know, you're first generation American. Your parents are
Second.
Second. Oh, second.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought you're. Told me that your dad was originally born in China.
No, my father and mother were actually born in Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay. Well, then I just didn't pay attention when we were talking about stuff. So you're second generation American, which is still not that far removed, where you get a lot of push, and parents in general don't tend to respond always that well to kids being art majors. So did they give you this ultimatum of we'll pay for it, but you got to have a fallback major?
You know, my parents have all, like, throughout my life, my parents have been really, really supportive of what I do. You know, of course they want to see me do well, and of course they probably are nervous for me at times. But
that's just called parenting.
Yeah, right. But they pretty much trust me in everything that I do, and have been really supportive. So they didn't really push the business thing too much. I think at that point I was like, it made sense to me. It made sense, like, oh yeah, marketing, graphic design. It's kind of like salt and pepper. Like, why would I not do this?
Yeah.
And especially now working for myself and having taught, you know, been in those business classes, it kind of prepared me to enter this, I guess, business mentality.
Sure.
I think that's the challenge with a lot of creative freelancers or even, you know, artists, is that it's hard to think of how to make money.
Oh yeah.
With these things, or how to market yourself, or how to you know, become visible and become known for what you do.
So, yeah, well, I still suck at it. So, and I, you know, granted, I was a double minor. I wasn't a double major. But my minor was marketing and communications.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I kind of took a similar path to you, just not as dedicated apparently.
Well, it's interesting too, because you know, you take all these classes, you learn all these concepts, you learn, you know, this jargon, you read the case studies, and a lot of it doesn't really stick when you work for yourself or you get into that world after academia. But there is something, at least, you know, beginning to think in those kind of ways and, you know, becoming familiar with the processes and just the components of a business.
Sure.
I think it kind of course, propels you and gets you at a good starting place than if you didn't know any of those things, of course. Yeah. So.
Cool. So when you got out of school, after having double majored in things, what was your career trajectory looking like to you at the time?
So I graduated in 2013, and I was very, very optimistic, probably too optimistic.
Then the real world crushed those dreams.
Yeah, so the Pittsburgh design scene is very, at least in my opinion, I think it's very heavily rooted right now in like UI, UX,
sure,
web design, you know, a lot of tech companies. So for someone like me who does more kind of like an artistic illustrative style, which bleeds over into my design work, there really wasn't a demand for that. So I think at that time I had pretty strong work, but there just wasn't any need for it. So people, I would go in for interviews and they'd be like, you know, we think you're really talented, we love your work, but, you know, we need someone who can do websites, you know, or we need someone who has a background in designing for mobile apps.
Sure.
So for 2 years, I could not find a job, and it was a pretty, It was a weird 2 years. It was full of uncertainty. It was discouraging at times, but during those 2 years, I was able to keep myself really busy, because when you don't have a job, you have to kind of create a job,
sure,
or at least focus on your work so it'll lead you to a job, if that's your goal. So during those 2 years, I was doing a lot of art markets, art exhibitions in Pittsburgh. I had some design contracts. I actually worked for a professor downtown in his studio for a little bit. I was a sign painter for Giant Eagle Market District, mm-hmm, in Pittsburgh. So for those that don't know what Giant Eagles are, they're just like grocery stores. It's like a grocery store chain. I was also a art instructor at this community art organization. I was teaching digital illustration. Mm-hmm. And lastly, I was a gallery attendant at the Andy Warhol Museum.
Oh, neat.
So it was a busy 2 years for sure. And it was fun and wonderful because I was able to focus on my work and kind of just build my own reputation. But ultimately, in the back of my mind, I was like, man, I need to get hired. I need to get a job. And
I need health insurance.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I need to move out of my parents.
Can't imagine why you'd want to do that. It's so cool when you're in your early 20s and you live with your parents. You meet all the girls that way.
Yeah, right. I think, every graduate kind of goes through that period of insecurity, and also this period of seeking for validation and trying to find it through getting hired. I know that was definitely how I was feeling at the time. Mm-hmm. So whenever I would go to interviews and they told me that they hired someone else, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm a piece of shit. Like, maybe my work isn't that good. Maybe.
So getting kicked in the gut every time you go to an interview and don't get hired.
I can't even say that I've had the worst of it. I know there's others out there that have just faced countless rejections, and I totally understand and know that it's hard. But at the same time, it's just, just keep going. You have to almost be relentless about it. Mm-hmm. If you're not getting work, definitely create work. Actually, there's almost an opportunity there, because then you have time to do what you want. And sometimes in doing what you want, that eventually blossoms into your career and into your life, which I'm kind of experiencing now, in relation to me working for myself.
Sure.
If I had not focused on just, those little weird ideas that I had in my head and manifesting them and building that Wong face, quote unquote brand, mm-hmm, I don't think I would be where I'm at right now,
right,
which is really focusing on building my own business and working for myself.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of walk through the steps where you got there. So you're 2 years, no job, living in your parents' house, being the lady killer, just like Nick Lachey. at what point do you end up, and I'll let you tell this story, because you ended up at Go Media for a while.
I did.
Was that your first kind of real not doing it for yourself gig and not freelancing gig?
Yeah, actually, getting hired at Go Media was in fact my first full-time design position. And it was interesting too, because I had followed Go Media ever since I was a junior in college. Mm-hmm. I absolutely loved their work. I knew that their kind of beginnings were mainly in illustration, and I really loved to see how that kind of translated in their design. And I was all for them. So I was really excited to have gotten hired by them. So 2 years, no job, opportunity with Go Media came, and then that's kind of just really sparked everything. Because for those that don't know, Go Media is in Cleveland, which is where Weapons is, so makes sense. So, you know, you get hired by a new company, it's like, it's in another city. It's like, oh man, I'm moving into another city. And even though Pittsburgh and Cleveland are, they're like sister cities, in all honesty, they're very, very similar. It was still very exciting to kind of be relocating. So I was absolutely just nervous, but absolutely thrilled for this new chapter of my life to begin.
Sure. So what do you end up doing at Go Media?
So I was hired to work on the Arsenal and as well as Weapons Massacre, you confessed. So I did the poster and pretty much all the promotional material for WMC Fest 6. So we're talking, you know, like social media, promo images. I kind of like set up like the merch. I did like things like the VIP passes, the golden ticket for the studio tours. I did that. I was talking to some of the artists that were involved. I was talking to sponsors and kind of ordering, you know, things that we needed for the fest, like signage and merchandise. So it was a lot of work, but it was definitely worth it. And it was kind of interesting too, because I had not been to a WMC Fest before, and so here I am, kind of like
your first experience with WMC Fest is designing for WMC Fest.
And then when I went, it was like, oh my god, it was like even more incredible and emotional, because it's like, you know, the fest in itself is truly great, and then, but being the person who's kind of, you know, doing a lot of work for it, along with, you know, others that are, you know, really helping create this amazing weekend, it becomes even more impactful. So
I can see that. Yeah. So, you know, you touched on Arsenal. For those who aren't familiar with what Arsenal is, can you give a little brief background of that?
Yeah, Arsenal is Go Media's like digital design store and resource. It's kind of like Creative Market, but the Arsenal has existed before Creative Market.
Sure.
I think they were the first to kind of enter that market.
Okay. So what exactly were you doing with the Arsenal stuff? Were you creating product, or were you overseeing, you know, kind of the marketing efforts of it, or a little bit
almost everything? I was doing product creation, content generation, blog writing, like video and editing for tutorials. I was doing illustrations for vector packs. I was doing mock-up templates. I'm trying to think what else. I was also networking for the Arsenal, reaching out to other designers, trying to set up opportunities for the Arsenal to feature them in some sort of way. You name it, and I probably had my hands in it.
Cleaning the bathroom, mopping the floor, taking lunch orders, all that fun stuff, right?
I had to order so many pizzas. Like.
Well, yeah. And those were just the ones for you, right?
Yeah.
So you worked for Go Media. How long were you there for? You were there for about a year?
Almost a year. I was actually there for about 8 months.
Gotcha.
And at that point, I was really missing my own personal work, and just really wanted to get back to it. So there just came a time where you know, it made more sense for me to kind of start going on my own and start working for myself. And also there's like some things that were changing inside the company. So it also made sense that they no longer needed an Arsenal designer.
Okay.
But, yeah.
So, you know, before you left, had you started building up a freelance base, or had you kind of kept a little bit of it going the entire time?
Yeah. Well, so this is where it gets kind of interesting, because so during those 2 years where I'm trying to seek validation through getting hired, but at the same time working on my stuff, I then, you know, get hired, but then I let my own personal work fall by the wayside. I just let it sit in the corner to collect dust because I was just so busy and so preoccupied with everything that I had to do for.
Did you kind of take the approach of, well, I'm getting a steady paycheck now, so I don't have to worry about this as much? And
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For sure. I actually had kind of an epiphany. I was home in Pittsburgh and I was talking to a friend. I was just talking about how much that I miss doing my own work. And in that moment, I realized, oh my God, I haven't done anything for myself. Like, I was really fortunate. I should say this. I was really, really fortunate that I was able to kind of put a lot of my personality in the work I did for Go Media. Mm-hmm. And I'm truly grateful for that. But, you know, it's still not the same as, like, you know, having your own stuff. You know, like just doing something for you. And at that point, I was almost like kind of becoming depressed because of it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 2 years and kind of building that reputation, like I had a newsletter and I had like, you know, subscribers on that. And then, you know, when I got hired, just again, all of that.
Just kind of forgot all about it.
Yeah, I hadn't sent a newsletter in like probably 6 months. I was barely posting any of my own work on social media. Mm-hmm. So yeah, unfortunately, Wong Face, you know, almost became No Face.
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so it was really good to get back to it and really get back to my own work and create imagery that I want to do and that will hopefully lead me to clients that, you know, have money to hire me to do like those sort of projects and jobs.
Sure.
And so far, it's been great.
So speaking of, you know, projects and jobs, you know, one of the things that you've been doing since you left there is this t-shirt project that's going on. Can you tell people about that a little bit?
Yeah. So it's still actually in its infancy. So for the longest time, actually, it's like everything has a story, right?
Yeah. Hey, it's a storytelling format. Go for it.
So for the longest time, people have been telling me, you know, you should do t-shirts. Like, your stuff would be great on t-shirts. I could totally see people wearing your t-shirts. And I would think about doing t-shirts and I would get overwhelmed because you have to purchase the shirts. You know, there's work in screen printing them. Mm-hmm. And even if you find someone to screen print them, now you're dealing with inventory. And it's like, how much do you invest? How much is that going to pay back? You know, how many sizes do I order of each shirt? What colors
I'm trying to figure that out right now.
You know, just like all these things, right? Then you have to fulfill the order and spend time doing that. So there's so many challenges with that that it just completely kind of unmotivated me to really do my work on shirts. So at WMC Fest 6, one of the guys from Clockwise, his name's Ben Petchel. I saw him at WMC Fest 6, and he's like, are you Jordan Wong? I'm like, yeah, how's it going, man? He's like, dude, I love your work. Actually, I used to work at Alpha Graphics, where you used to have your art prints made. And I remember seeing your works go through the print shop, and I actually took a couple of pieces, which was fine with me. I thought it was funny that he enjoyed my works so much that he kind of like printed an extra or maybe like took one, which like is super flattering, and that doesn't bother me at all. But it was just incredible to, you know, have someone at this design conference that knew me before I started Go Media and saw my work while I was back in Pittsburgh.
Sure.
So then he again brought up the idea of like, you know, oh, have you thought about putting your stuff on t-shirts? Because Clockwise does a lot of apparel printing. And I told him kind of, you know, what I just told you now, just then, about how I was kind of discouraged with all the challenges. He's like, oh, you know, you definitely should look into the service that we provide, which they actually handle printing and order fulfillment for artists. And you kind of like sync up your online shop with them, and they just like, you know, bill you out how much it costs per shirt.
Sure.
So then all you have to do is the designs. But even with him telling me about those possibilities, I still put it off for some reason. And it wasn't until recently, about maybe, I think it's now 3 months, that I've been kind of diving into the t-shirt world. Mm-hmm. Is when I really started, and just kind of building up some sort of means of passive income. Mm-hmm. Because the setup is so great. All I have to really worry about is the design of the t-shirts. Mm-hmm. And promoting them on my end. I don't have to worry about printing them. I don't have to worry about ordering a bunch of shirts. I don't have to worry about inventory. I don't have to spend time mailing them out. You know, all I have to do is focus on the design. And that's actually what I'm really, really interested in.
Sure.
Is more so the design end of things, which it was interesting talking to Mitch at Weapons, mm-hmm. the last one, you know, because he's actually more interested in like printing them and you know, getting the shirts made. And
yeah, he likes the hands-on tactical approach too.
Yeah, yeah. Which again, that's fantastic, because we need people that specialize in those processes, mm-hmm. And actually make it happen. I just know me personally, I wasn't really interested in that. I was more interested in creating the imagery.
So, you want to make the pretty stuff. You don't care about making the actual physical product.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, I really value those that do. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, kind of picky with, you know, who I'm entrusting to do that end of the job.
Sure.
Clockwise does a great job when it comes to printing shirts.
So are they printing like one-off direct to garment? Is that how they? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And I had to go down to their facility to kind of see it myself, because, you know, designers, I'm not necessarily like this myself, but I know that designers really care about little things like that. Like, oh, is this a digital print versus like a screen print? Oh, I only like screen prints, you know, and things like that. So I was kind of skeptical of like what digital printing would look like on a t-shirt.
Sure.
But, you know, I went down there, they showed me their examples, and honestly, I could not tell the difference, really. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about like a flat color design. I mean, it just looks so good. It looks so good. And the ink itself wasn't like hard.
So it wasn't the Plastisol stuff. It was more water-based.
I think I'm not.
Plastisol is the one that feels like a giant sticker that's on your chest that doesn't breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure what ink they're using, but I know it's not.
It feels nice. Not, yeah. That's all you care about, right?
Yeah. At the same point, I was like, you know, will this hold up and does it feel nice? And, you know, it does for both of those aspects. So I was like, all right, that's good. Like,
gotcha. So what was it that, cause you mentioned passive income, what was it that got you into wanting to do the passive income stuff? Was that working at Arsenal that kind of sparked that idea for you, or were there other things?
I think,
I mean, other than, you know, wanting to have some money coming in.
I think that was actually mostly it. Like, you know, because I talk to Dustin pretty frequently, and you know, he's a huge advocate of passive income. I mean, he's built his life on
it. Yeah, his whole life is built off
business. That's how he really like just launched. And we've talked about it at Weapons. We talked about it at Creative South. You know, sometimes we'll talk over, you know, Google Hangouts, and we'll talk about business, and he'll tell me, you know, all these things in relation to passive income and growing that. And I was like, I really should do this. I really should do this. It's just ironic though, because Dustin, you know, his passive income is more based on the selling of digital products.
Sure.
Where I'm going towards physical products. And I think I forget who he was interviewed by. It was either for Design Recharge, or maybe it was for Creative South, but he was like talking about, I think it was for Design Recharge. He was actually talking about like, yeah, I wouldn't suggest doing t-shirts like, or a physical product like that. Like there's all these challenges.
I don't think he said that when I interviewed him. So we'll blame Diane.
Yeah. It might've been when he was talking to Diane. It was definitely when he was talking to Diane, because I remember I was in the chat and I was like, I'm about to sell t-shirts, which, you know, he later, he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to like, you know, badmouth that or discourage you from doing that. But I mean, he was absolutely right. All those challenges is what prevented me from the first place. But now that I've found, a way to just eliminate all those barriers, it has allowed me to do this. Mm-hmm. So if I had not talked to Ben from Clockwise, I wouldn't be doing t-shirts right now.
So do you think, and I want to move into something else here, but because I've noticed you sent me a sketch over that was this, I don't know how to describe it, almost a robot head meets Krishna head meets whatever. And I know that kind of sprung out of your automatic drawings. Do you think that sort of playing on and coming up with ideas for these t-shirts helped spur on that automatic drawing process?
For the longest time, the automatic drawings that I've been doing for a while were always kind of like their separate thing. I did them more as like it's a drawing exercise just to get my hand moving and just start making marks.
Sure. Let me stop you real quick. And sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I guess we should probably explain what automatic drawings are.
Yeah, I guess that's a good idea.
That'll be helpful.
So essentially, the short answer, they're doodles. To be honest, they're just little doodles. The long answer is that they're these drawings where you're not focused on depicting something. You're more focused on just making split-second visual decisions. So a lot of it is subconscious, and a lot of it is very in the moment. And you just kind of go. So again, I was kind of using those drawings and that exercise to take a break from depicting something. So it was really freeing and I had a lot of fun with it. And my earlier automatic drawings actually, look a little different than the ones that I do now. So it was kind of weird to like kind of develop this subconscious drawing style. Mm-hmm. But now I realize that it might be kind of cool to combine that with, my illustrational style that I'm kind of more known for, or, you know, combining this non-objective, thing with an objective imagery.
Sure.
So that's kind of where the image that I sent you is the result of. So yeah, you're absolutely right in saying that, yeah, it kind of looks like a robot head. It's because it kind of is, because, initially I was like, you know, I kind of want to combine, like, I kind of depict like this helmet, like this robot helmet. Mm-hmm. And, for those, that have seen it on my Instagram or on my blog for Facebook, because I know I've posted a kind of like a work in progress shot.
Sure.
If you look at it, it kind of looks like it's from Gundam.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's yeah, a little Gundam, a little Voltron-y, little.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely inspired by, you know, kind of that Japanese robot aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Which, honestly, if you look at my work, it's all in there.
There's a lot of that in there, yeah.
It's like the cornerstone.
We know what cartoons you like, Jordan.
All right.
I have no complaint. I like those ones too. So.
But it's kind of cool to have that aesthetic, but then not do something that's directly that, but to deviate and to kind of play with that, especially mixing it with, you know, something that's more abstract and playful as far as just like the lines and shapes versus just the imagery.
Sure. So when you're doing this process, do you ever, you know, you're mindlessly doodling, just kind of letting things go, and then you see something from it and then transform it? Is that how you end up kind of, I don't know, you get inspired by the doodle to create something that's more tangible?
It kind of varies. In the beginning, it was very much just going, just drawing. But then I kind of started playing with this idea of just doing like really fast, like circles and like kind of gestural shapes, mm-hmm. and then looking at those shapes and then pulling out things that I was seeing. But sure. Again, still very kind of like on the fly and whatnot. But now it's kind of going towards a direction of where I kind of have a vague idea of like, okay, this is like a kind of an image that I want to do. So mm-hmm. like for that work in progress shot that I sent you, I was like, well, I want to do like a Gundam inspired helmet. But like, that's it as far as like trying to hammer out specifics for the drawing. Mm-hmm. So I'll have like a kind of a vague idea and then I'll just go. So again, the process kind of varies, whether it's just doing it instinctually completely to doing something that's kind of loose and then building upon that versus having more of a definitive idea and then fleshing that out a little bit and then kind of going wild.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you ever, you know, during that process, just look at it and wonder if you need psychological help? Because I'm not making fun of you here. I like when I doodle stuff, it always ends up like being really concentrated on one end, where like if you were doing this Rorschach test of doodles, like it gets real heavy and dark in one end. And I don't mean like subject matter dark, just like all of my ink will end up concentrating to one side where I've for some reason focused on that side more, not even consciously.
Right.
Do you ever do that where you find that like you're drawing it out and you get this like off balance thing and it's like,
yeah, that's why it's interesting to see like what the drawings are becoming now, because again, at the beginning they were completely subconscious and I would just go, but now I'm starting to kind of be more conscious in my visual decisions.
More conscious in your subconscious.
Yeah, more conscious. It's such a weird thing because it's now like kind of in the middle. You know, they're supposed to be automatic, but now I'm like kind of thinking more about them, which means that they're kind of not 100% truly automatic anymore. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it fluctuates. It really fluctuates, because I will, just as you kind of described, like end up drawing something but then realizing, man, it's really heavy. I should like kind of go over here and kind of balance it out a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of my kind of design sensibilities come into play in doing these, just as far as like, you know, contrast or hierarchy or balance.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see kind of my innate sense of those visual principles bleed over to.
Sure. Well, I've noticed a lot of them, you have this, I'm trying to figure out the right word. You have this symmetry that goes on through a lot of things, but then you'll have these details in it that are very asymmetrical. if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually especially true with this helmet, this like robot helmet piece mm-hmm. that I'm working on right now. Actually, in the past, I don't think my automatic drawings have really been like that. This is the first time that it's kind of diving into that territory. And again, I think it's because I have more of a specific idea in mind and sure. what I want to be. So and maybe I'll post like kind of the process images. I started very symmetrical. I actually started drawing like half of the helmet along with the face and kind of gained like an idea of like, okay, this is like kind of the structure that I want it to be. And then flipped the drawing, merged it. And then I re-illustrated that in Illustrator, mm-hmm. just of the helmet. I then printed it out and then started doing automatic drawing on top of it. So a lot of it is like drawing, putting it in the computer, you know, fleshing that out or re-illustrating the lines to make them crisper. Then printing that out again, then drawing on top of it again, then I'm going to put it back into the computer and illustrate those lines. So it's a lot of like,
at what point do you know when to stop? Because that sounds like a fun exercise, but it also sounds like it could go on forever.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. For me, I think it's whenever I achieved a balance of chaotic, fanciful detail, but also...
That's a great way to describe it.
Thank you. But also achieving a kind of harmonious sense of white space as well.
Sure.
I really like when it comes to illustration and any kind of illustration, whether I'm doing automatic drawings or client work or anything. And I think this is also true for my design work. I really, really favor this idea of, you know, melody and harmony, mm-hmm. Balance, you know, of having, you know, variation in line work, but also the ability to breathe, you know, between the spaces of those lines. So white space is really, really important to me, as well, you know, as much as the actual lines themselves.
Yeah, because you've got a lot of drawings where there is this strong sense of negative space that comes across that's creating more of the object than the actual positive space, which I've always found interesting because it's one of those things that while I'm fascinated with it, I'm not good at doing something like that. So when I see stuff like that, I'm generally really drawn to it.
I'm sure there'll be a point in my illustration and in my drawing that I might go the opposite direction mm-hmm. of going more kind of over the top and just like putting lines in everything. I have a buddy in Pittsburgh. He's another illustrator. His name's Joe Mrock. You guys should look him up. I always give a shout out to him. He's like one of my best friends. But his work is extremely detailed. Like, absolutely maximal when it comes to line work. So it's interesting to kind of see his work and then have my work. And we've shown together too.
Mm-hmm. It's somehow you're going to have to send me some links to his stuff so I can put it in the show notes.
He's incredible. He's incredible. Whenever I go home to Pittsburgh, I always try to meet up with him and we always end up talking about illustration and business as well. Cause he's a freelancer.
Is he? Okay.
Yep.
So you've gone through all this stuff. One thing I wanted to touch on to go off on a tangent and kind of get back to t-shirts is the Chinese bad luck t-shirt.
Yes. Yes. My most recent t-shirt.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Where did that one come from?
So I think that was spawned from first doing the noodles t-shirt. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, is more lighthearted, is kind of playful. And I kind of started with that bowl imagery and I thought of like, oh man, it'd be kind of cool to like do something kind of more grim. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I first started thinking of the imagery of like a rice bowl with the chopsticks sticking out, which for those who don't know is bad manners to do that. And it's actually bad luck to do that in Chinese culture.
Gotcha.
I think it might be true in other Asian cultures as well, but it resembles the funeral ritual of burning incense. So if you go out to eat, you know, and pretty much any Asian restaurant, do not put your chopsticks like sticking straight out of your bowl.
Unless you're trying to send a message.
Yeah. Right. So I was like, oh man, that's kind of cool, but I kind of want some other elements to it. So then I started thinking about like, well, what else is kind of, you know, uncouth or bad to do in Chinese culture? And I thought of the number four and how it's also tied to the character for death. Mm-hmm. Like they're very similar. So I was like, oh, that'd be kind of cool to incorporate that as well. But while I'm creating this t-shirt, I was a little apprehensive of doing it. Because again, these are like bad omens in Chinese culture.
Things you're
like,
not supposed to draw.
Yeah, you're not really supposed to like promote or, you know, engage in like those kind of ideas or, you know, whatnot. But I thought that in doing this, it kind of opens the door to some more interesting dialogues, which that's why I posted recently my response to my college professor's inquiry of the shirt, like whether the shirt was supposed to bring on bad luck to the wearer, or is it like some sort of like, you know, way to stop bad luck, kind of thing. And I was just kind of talking about how I wanted to play with those symbols. It's definitely not, so to set the record straight, it's definitely not to bring upon bad luck. It's just inspired by these.
Except for symbols. To you, Steve, you asshole.
But because I have one myself and I wear it all the time and hopefully nothing super bad happens.
So I got to ask this, since you take pictures of your dad in almost every shirt, have you convinced your dad to wear this one?
So I should say, actually, he takes the pictures on his own.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like it's it's incredible. He's buying a number of shirts, and he absolutely loves them. And the best thing about it is he's always doing like martial art poses when he's wearing the t-shirts. He's been practicing martial arts for 30 years now, and yeah, he's always like wearing them and just like doing these poses, which they're perfectly him, and I think they're really, really funny and fun. But I don't think he's gonna buy this one. He might.
Have you asked him specifically?
I have not asked him specifically. My grandmother lives at my father's house, so I don't know if she would appreciate seeing that around all the time. I remember showing her the design, and actually I was pretty surprised. She didn't give too bad of a reaction to it. The worst was whenever I was wearing the shirt out in public and I went to like the local Asian market, and I passed by this like old Chinese grandmother, and she saw my shirt and she was like, oh,
ran away.
Yeah, and she like just like turned away. I mean, because I do have the characters literally that say death on them. So maybe she like read that. I don't even know if she like got the complete image and all of the bad luck symbols in it. But
probably not if she turned away that quickly.
Yeah. But, you know, like in American culture, we put skulls on shirts. We love putting skulls on shirts. I mean, if you look at, you know, a lot of imagery that's used for, you know, hardcore or heavy metal bands, it's always pretty grim.
Well, they do call it death metal.
They do call it death metal. So this idea of like putting grim imagery on shirts is definitely, of course, not anything new. Yeah. I think where it just becomes fun is that it's Chinese imagery. which I haven't really seen on too many shirts.
Well, you're melding American culture and Chinese culture in an interesting way that doesn't usually get done.
And you know what? I think because me and kind of my struggles with cultural and ethnic identity, it makes sense that a shirt like this would kind of come into existence. And I think in some ways it might be a way for me to kind of cope with, you know, being second generation American, you know, but also ethnically being Chinese. Mm-hmm. Like, so, I don't even speak the language. So oftentimes I feel kind of in this weird space, you know, kind of isolated in a sense.
Do you, I'm assuming that you know a few words. Like, my family's Danish. I'm third generation American from that. So I know, like, maybe five words. Like, I couldn't even order a meal, but I could tell you, you know, what you say after a meal of, you know, to thank somebody. But that's about it.
Yeah, I can definitely order a meal. I think that was actually the first priority. Like, when it came to learning any kind of Chinese, like, all right, what are the favorite things that I like to eat? All right, what's the Chinese words for the... Okay, good.
And not go complete stereotypical and say the number 15, right?
Yeah. Or actually order things like off the menu, that's not on it. Or I guess, you know, like a secret menu or whatever.
Yeah, the menu that they will give to actual Chinese people versus to the white people. Yeah. See, I want to know how I can get to order off that menu because I want to try those foods.
Just come eat with me.
Okay. Well, yeah. next time I next time I'm with you, I will do that. So,
all right,
perfect. We got to find a Chinese place in Columbus at Creative South.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Absolutely. Yay. Real food, not sauces made with Heinz ketchup and sugar and corn syrup.
My grandmother has actually done pretty good with those ingredients.
Well, like, I mean,
yeah,
we've all made things from those ingredients, especially when you're in college.
To make something really well, that's the challenge.
True.
That's the challenge.
Well, yeah. You know, I don't want to keep you too long, but since you did mention it, what are some of those struggles that you have with, you know, kind of coming together with the different aspects of your upbringing and culture? And
absolutely. Well, I guess I should refer to another interview that I did.
Sure.
This was with a friend from back home in Pittsburgh. It was like for a class in her grad program. And I kind of talk about some of these things. So if anyone's interested in listening more on that, it's actually on my website under like articles and interviews. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just kind of a strange thing to look something and actually be, you know, something, but not feel like you are. That's super vague, and I know that could be actually applied to a lot of situations. But I guess more specifically, there was a long time that I felt uncomfortable, like going into Chinese supermarkets or going to really authentic Chinese restaurants out of this nervousness that someone would start speaking Chinese to me and I would not understand what they were saying.
Sure.
And kind of, you know, look dumb. Or whatnot. And, you know, of course, I've had the comments like, why don't you know Chinese? And you should learn Chinese. But again, one, you have to really want to learn Chinese, or two, you have to really grow up with it. Mm-hmm. My upbringing, you know, I grew up in an area that was predominantly white. It was very suburban. So even if my parents tried to teach me Chinese, but, you know, they talk it at home, it really has no good if I'm going out and playing with my friends who mainly speak English. So there's no way that the language is just going to stick. I think that's probably the biggest root of it, is that I just don't know the language. So maybe I should learn it.
They got Rosetta Stone now. So
plus I'm not finding any situations in which I'm really would have like an opportunity to practice. I mean, I have a couple of Chinese friends that I could practice with. But day to day, I'm speaking English. You know, sure. I'm an American. You know, I'm dealing with other English speaking people, whether it's business or whether it's, you know, just going out and having fun and socializing. So it's difficult. It's difficult. I don't want to say that it's not important to, you know, learn one's own, you know, heritage and the language, you know, from their ethnicity. But I think that's just, I have to be honest and say, like, that's just where it's, you know, difficult for me to just go out and learn Chinese. I always make the joke that I think I would learn Chinese if I had like a Chinese wife. That'd probably be like the time that I would learn it, which
it'd be helpful.
You know, yeah. But yeah, it's always been an interesting thing for sure.
Well, I mean, I would imagine that, you know, culturally you also get the unintentional kind of racism and stereotypes that come with it from people who look like me, who think that you're going to speak Chinese or have, you know, this weird Asian accent that is on the flip side too.
So there are two things I want to say with that. One is that sometimes, like, we, like, being a Chinese person, and especially I did this whenever I was younger, I kind of use that as a means to cope with my own, like, racial identity. Sure. Especially, like I said, growing up and being surrounded by people that don't look like me, you know, just being the only Asian kid in a group of, you know, white kids, you're definitely going to get those kind of jokes. So I almost, at that time, in kind of figuring out how to deal with those jokes being made, I kind of beat them to it. So I would kind of claim and make those jokes about myself.
So that's self-deprecating to protect yourself.
Yeah. Or like I would poke fun at myself and beat them to it. And at that time, that was definitely a way for me to kind of cope with being different. But then later down the road, I realized that that wasn't healthy either.
Sure.
And actually, you know, now that I've gotten older and, you know, the people that I surround myself that are pretty worldly and culturally accepting and open-minded and even interested, I rarely get those jokes. And, you know, I'm pretty optimistic in the age that we're living in, you know, with the internet and just so many ways to experience other cultures and not have to go there. Mm-hmm. I think the world is becoming just more knowledgeable, more accepting, more considerate, and more just conscious. So I barely get those jokes these days.
That's good.
Yeah. Like, and it's interesting because, you know, like BuzzFeed releases all those videos, you know, that kind of deals with like that. They released one like about Asians and, you know, they something along like lines of like, you know, I'm Asian, but I don't know. I was born in America, or I'm Asian, but, you know, I don't speak, you know, Chinese or Japanese. So kind of bringing attention to all these stereotypes that have just been thrown around and, you know, just hurtful remarks. We live in an age where that's now starting to become part of the dialogue, and that's now starting to be recognized. So I'm pretty, you know, I'm pretty optimistic as far as, you know, that decreasing. I mean, it has for my life. Again, I barely get those like jokes. And if I do get those jokes, it's like with really, really close friends or people that, you know, they totally get it. They understand that, like, they can make this joke not because I'm Asian, but because it's me, because, you know, it's their friend. And they know that they can do it without me getting offended. So, Yeah.
Or they're doing it to beat you to the punch. To one up you.
I think then I'm just like, oh, fine. I won't take you to those awesome restaurants that I know about. You know?
You just missed out on that, asshole. See you next Tuesday.
Yeah, they're all really good.
Cool. Well, Jordan, I appreciate you taking the time. Real quickly, wrapping up, what's on the horizon for you?
Man, I've been thinking about my business a lot lately, and I'll try and keep this kind of short. Because right now I'm going through a slow period.
Sure.
But, and to anyone that is going through a slow period or has gone through a slow period, there's actually an opportunity there, because it gives you a chance to actually think and strategize and kind of come up with new ways to promote your work, or, you know, gives you time to research different clients that you want to reach out to, or think of, you know, your own projects that you want to start. So that's kind of where I'm at right now, is just looking at things, you know, how am I getting clients, how, you know, what projects am I working on, you know, how are the t-shirt sales doing, how can I increase that, you know, where's my visibility at, just like all those ticky-tack, you know, kind of like long-term goal-setting oriented things. So right now I'm kind of focusing on that. And right, one of the biggest goals right now is I want to increase my visibility by upping my production of just like image making. For the longest time, I would just draw things and I would just post them. But then I kind of switched mentality, thinking like, okay, like I need to like start putting this in a context and like putting, like making it a way to like, you know, it be a product or somehow sell it. So then I was kind of more focused on that, which led to me creating less just fun stuff on a whim. Mm-hmm. But now I'm at a point in realizing that, oh my God, that's actually really important, because that's my form of marketing.
Sure.
Even if it's not used for anything, even if it's not going on a t-shirt and making me, you know, hundreds of dollars, or if it's, you know, not for a client or whatnot, I need to be posting on the regular. It's kind of embarrassing that I came to this conclusion like so late, but you know, I think there's a balance. You know, you need to, you know, as an illustrator, designer, as an artist, you know, you need to just keep being active, just, you know, show work that you're doing, have a presence online, you know, make it very, very evident that you are, you know, this is what you're doing. And, you know, and people will see it, and hopefully some success will result from it. I know every time I post something, I end up getting like 2, 3, sometimes 5, 10 more followers on Instagram, which of course is like growing your audience. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I'm focusing on right now, is just being more active, doing a better job of making sure that I'm at my drawing table or, you know, in front of Illustrator and just making things.
Sure.
But I think having a long-term goal, because I have this show coming up in Pittsburgh, and working with these automatic drawing series, I think that will probably just result in itself of getting done.
Awesome. Well, where can people find you online?
So you can find me online mainly at wongface.com. Mm-hmm. I also have a Tumblr, which I use as my blog. So that's wongface.tumblr.com. And then my online store is wongface.storeenvy.com. And I'm also on Instagram at wongface. So it's all pretty much wongface.
You know, you still have a Dribbble invite out there that I sent you. Oh, that'd be a good place to post some of these drawings and stuff, too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's another thing.
I just had to give you shit about that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Okay, well, see, that's an example of like, yeah, no, he really needs to work on that. Like, you know.
I tell you what, put it up by the time this is up and I can link to it in the show notes.
All right. Perfect. Perfect.
I'm giving you an assignment. It's homework for Jordan.
It's good. That's good. Yeah. I need that. I need that.
Cool. Well, Jordan, thank you so much for taking the time. We end up every episode by saying go out and hug some necks. And since you've been to Creative South, you kind of, you know what that means. Would you mind taking us out by saying it?
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And definitely go out and hug some necks.
You can find out more about Jordan at wongface.com and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at CreativeSOPod and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CreativeSouthGA or over at CreativeSouth.com, and I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit jack.ink/design and get up to $75 off your next order when you use promo code CSPodcast16. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. Don't forget to head over to CreativeSouthGA.com right now to pick up your tickets for Creative South in April of 2017. We're looking forward to seeing you there and hugging some necks. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at Patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.